with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
I was involved in a lot of community projects during the pandemic, which made me realize how many people were so great at just like coming together and supporting one another, and how that is like the way that we will succeed. No matter the times that we're in and how shitty it can be, the core is like having a community of people and supporting one another, and that's how we can come out of things. And I think, yeah, the future, it's always, things are going to suck again and it's going to come back. But if you have a core community of people and you have a supportive group of people in your life, you'll survive and you'll be great.
Kingston has long been a breeding ground for young bands and emerging musical talent. For decades, the music community has springboarded countless acts toward their musical aspirations. Some have achieved popularity and recognition beyond Kingston's borders, while others have enjoyed rewarding careers as locally based professional musicians. This is Kingston Live, and on this episode, we talk to Clea Way Brackenbury and Michael Broadhead of Piner about their biggest performance to date and about the Kingston X Factor that's helped contribute to the group's growing popularity on the East Coast. Should we get into it then?
Sure.
And hello, this is Kingston Live. I am Johnny San.
I'm Riley Jabor.
We have with us Michael Broadhead.
Me?
Yes, you.
Yes, me, Michael Broadhead.
And I meant to ask this as well. Do you mind if I use your proper name? Or
yeah, you can say Clea Way Brackenbury.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a handful.
It's good because I wanted to because it's a great name. And we have Clea Way Brackenbury, also known as Piner, with us today.
Hi.
Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Let's start with that awesome show just a few nights ago at Rock in the Square, opening for Crash Test Dummies.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Had you played to a crowd like that before?
No. I would say that was probably one of the biggest shows that we've played.
I think the last time I saw a crowd that big was Talk of the Street at the Square again.
Yeah, because Michael's actually played in the Square multiple times, and Talk of the Street was
It was for Blues Fest. It's maybe 2018.
Well, that's why I asked, because like, I feel like Michael's played with everybody.
I played with quite a few folks around town. Yeah.
Yes.
I would say this is probably my biggest gig in a while. I mean, I played Blues Fest with Funeral Lakes a couple weeks ago, and that was almost as many people in the audience, but not quite. So Kingston had a Blues Fest beat for audience for me in particular, if that's a metric anyone else other than me is measuring.
I'm so bad at looking at crowds and estimating how many people are there, but there was a gig at the Seahorse in Halifax that I played, and that one was fully packed, but I'm pretty sure the Square holds more people than the Seahorse.
Well, I don't know what the numbers were. Yeah. It was obviously a lot of people.
Yeah.
One of the things that, with Kingston Live, we want to promote the local music scene, obviously. One of the things that I keep coming back to, and we've talked about this in the podcast before, is bridging that gap between the casual music audience and the dedicated music audience. Because I imagine you probably saw a different crowd and maybe got a different interaction. And hopefully that brought your music to a wider audience.
Definitely. Yeah. There was definitely a lot of people that I saw that I hadn't really seen before. But I also think making that show accessible, like it was a free show for everybody, which just got so many people out to see music who might not even like be avid music goers. Like I think there were a lot of people in the crowd who were like, I'm just here for a good night. I think there was probably tourists who were just wanting to come check it out as well, which was really nice. So there was a big demographic that way. I had like all of my family and my friends and people who always come out to our shows as well, but it was fun to have like that mixture of people at Rock in the Square.
And I think it was interesting. I was chatting with Liam after, you know, and because you play lots of shows around town and recognize lots of people in the audience, that kind of thing. But having that feeling up on that stage and being like, there's so many people that I don't recognize. And having that moment of like, I would love to just have a moment and go like, come on out to local shows more. Like, this stuff happens all the time. We'd love to see you here. But I think part of that is just that it's, I think this show did some things really well for accessibility reasons that also made it super feasible for people to come out. Mm-hmm. Like a free show, that's a lot more accessible. Free transit, that makes it more accessible.
All ages. Because the amount of kids, I actually had so many cute moments after the show.
I saw it on Instagram. You had some kids that wanted to take a picture with you.
Yeah. I got off the stage and there's like that fenced in area around the stage and there's like these five kids and they're like leaning on the fence and they're like, hey, you, can we take a photo with you? And so I went out there and like we did rock star poses. They showed me like their favorite rock star poses and we took a whole bunch of pictures. And then as I was walking through the crowd, I was stopped by like so many like 10-year-old, 8-year-olds. So I think my fan base is going to be now children. But I think we need to play more all ages shows too.
Yeah.
I think they're good fans.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And it's a big thing to ask a parent to find a, you know, lots of people have trouble getting babysitters and you got to pay for the babysitter. Right. And so lots of folks really rely on shows where you can bring kids to be able to come themselves, which I think is a great thing. Yeah. I think it's like all ages is really important because I think it can be tough for places for kids to get involved in the music scene, you know, and if the city can open up a place like Market Square to be an all ages venue, that's amazing. And I think we just need more of that kind of thing because that's something that I'd really like to see in Kingston is creating this pipeline that, you know, kids start in music education, they get excited about it, they form bands. And then they have a way into the scene where I think without kind of good all ages venues, there's a bit of that discontinuity of like you play at school, you stop, and then you maybe pick it up again as an adult.
And I don't know about you, Michael, but I would say I grew up inspired by going to live shows, like the amount of live shows I went to in Kingston. And I went to the Mansion when I was 8, like lots of times. The Mansion was pretty chill. Like I was clearly underage, but I would watch Michael and I'd watch my brother's bands. And like, that is how I formed like a love of music is just dancing as a kid and being like, this just fills me and my, like my love for music. And then just the amount of bands and music festivals that I went to just made me want to play music.
And I think it's getting better. Like the Broom Factory has been really good that way. Lots of all ages shows.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you talked about like the accessibility of it and like tourists and stuff. And I think that's like so important too. I always felt like when they do like Rock in the Square for any band, it kind of feels like when they do Doors Open Kingston and people get to check out like all these different, you know, the utilities building or something.
Right.
Like I never get to go in here, but now it feels like I belong here. It's almost like that for the music scene where I remember going to see bands for like Rock in the Square and there'll be people that remind me of like my mom or my grandma. And I'm like, I've never run into you at the Mansion, but you are enjoying yourself here. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like seeing everybody out. Like, I mean, I grew up playing shows at the Artel, that kind of thing. I really appreciated that space for getting to just experiment as a kid.
12 Cat.
Yeah. 12 Cat was great for getting to try out stuff. Yeah. But it's really great to see people come out that you don't normally see because it makes you feel like you're part of, I think, especially often like local musicians or younger musicians can find themselves feeling a bit lonely in the scene of like, why don't people come out to my gigs kind of, you know, and I think that like the city putting energy into providing that promotion for local musicians is amazing because it helps us feel like we're in a scene and it helps us feel like there's people out there that want to see us. And, you know, I think it felt really great for us playing on stage to have all these people that were maybe new to the music see it. I think that as long as that keeps happening, it's great for the city. It's great for the scene.
During that whole show, all I was thinking was, I want to do it again.
Yeah. When Jason at the end said like, all right, see you next year. I was like, why wait a year?
Tomorrow. Like,
good point. Yeah.
Let's just do it every month. That'd be fun.
Absolutely.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. You briefly mentioned the Seahorse, so I feel like this is a great time to transition into this. I want to talk about the comparisons of like the Kingston music scene, and I feel like people often compare it to Halifax or the East Coast overall. And as someone who grew up in Kingston and then spent some time in Nova Scotia, can you comment on that? Do you see any similarities there?
It's hard. Like, I see some similarities, but I also see a lot of differences. So I was in Antigonish, which is super small and rural. So I think it definitely had some differences to the Kingston music scene. It's a very small community of people. And what I notice about the East Coast is it's nice because there's not much else going on a Friday night. So everybody goes out. It's like so easy to get people out to shows in the East Coast. Like East Coast crowds just love to have a good time. So I felt like there was like a big difference just in terms of like almost like the city versus rural aspect. Whereas Halifax, I also think that there's a lot of people who are dying to go out and see music as well. Growing up in Kingston, I grew up in Skeleton Park area, which is very artsy, very DIY. And I felt super supported, and like everybody was like, oh, I'll play on your record. I'll do this. Like, I want to be involved in any way. And then when I went out east, it was very similar. Like, there's just filled with musicians anywhere you go. People are like, hey, I want to play with you. And so I felt like there was like a big similarity in terms of like having a lot of musicians and a very condensed amount of musicians, because Kingston and the East Coast just have so many people who grow up playing music. Sometimes I feel like there's like a little bit of like, I don't want to shit on Ontario, but like there's a little bit of like an Ontario like, oh, we're more reserved, so we won't talk to you before a show, or like, I don't know. It's not as like welcoming sometimes when you play with like different Ontario bands. Sometimes it can be like a little bit like, oh, I don't really know you, so I feel awkward, so I'm not going to say hi. And I felt like playing out east, it brought me out of my shell a lot, because people are so social and like, hey, how's it going? Like, even the Crash Test Dummies show, Leaf, who plays the guitar like in Crash Test Dummies, I don't know if you know him, but he also plays with Matt Mays. And right when we walked up to sound check, he looks over at us, he goes, hey, how's it going? I was like, you're from the East Coast, but I also have seen him play in the East Coast. Yeah. But it was just like this big, like welcoming, like, hey, how are you? How's it going? Like, we're all friends and pals, which I really love. And I do miss that a lot about the East Coast. And I think there are pockets of that in Kingston, but it's just harder because there's so many more people.
I think we also, I mean, like, I think in Ontario, you have Toronto's right there, yeah. Montreal. And yeah. So I think there's also a bit of that kind of element of, you know, when people are in the scene for a while and they experience adversity, you can get jaded over time, right?
Yeah.
And I think part of maybe the benefit of the East Coast is that there isn't that kind of, you're all working to build the same platform to support all of you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in Ontario, you get more of that kind of thing of, well, I've got mine, I've figured my own thing out.
I also think that just generally, like, the East Coast, like, you don't get very far if you're snotty or if you don't treat people well, because it's so small. Like, the amount of times it's like, oh, what's your family name? Who's your father? Like, and then you say the name, they're like, oh, that's a good family. It's very much about, like, you don't get very far if you're not a kind person and if you don't meet people where they're at. And I feel like it's almost this difference where, like, you actually do get far if maybe you're, like, competitive or you're like, okay, I want to, like, just try and make it in Ontario. Like, there's a weird different divide that way, but I don't know.
Well, I think
that's my take on it, actually. And even with this, like, upcoming tour, it was a lot of work to try and, like, book it all myself in July, early July, when I was, like, working a lot and trying to, like, book everything. I was reminded at, like, how great the community is at East. Like, the amount of people who booked my shows for me from the East Coast, they're like, hey, I'll just book that for you. Like, don't worry about it. I don't know if anyone knows, like, the Absolute Losers. They're based in PEI, but they just played at Dawson City Music Festival. But one of my friends there, he's like, I'll book your PEI show. Like, don't worry about it. You don't have to do anything. Just show up and play. And I was like, this is sick. Like, you're just, and I wish that was everywhere. Like no matter what city you go to, like, just having that kind of community and, like, yeah, if they ever come here, I'll do that for them. Like, it's just like kind of helping one another out, because it is hard when it comes down to being an independent artist and trying to navigate all of the booking stuff. And
I thought we were nice here. I feel like we're not as nice as we thought we were.
Now we just got to elevate our niceness.
Yeah, okay, I think we're nice. We're not like East Coast nice.
There's, you know.
No, the amount of shows that Rob has set me up to, though, with Kingston Live, Rob is an East Coast guy at heart, too, though.
No,
like,
that's neat, because he's a Toronto guy, which from what you're saying sounds like the opposite of East Coast.
He was born in the wrong part. He's East Coast at heart, born in the wrong city.
Yeah. The Stan Rogers story, eh?
Well, What's a Stan Rogers story?
He's Stan Rogers. Well, he grew up in Stony Creek near Hamilton, but he, you know that song, Watching the Apples Grow?
Yeah.
Your scummy lakes in the city of Toronto won't do a damn thing for me. I'd rather live by the sea.
Oh, yeah. He's a Nova Scotia boy.
Yeah. But yeah. I think that kindness is here too in Kingston. I think that
100%.
I think it is here. It's here anywhere. There's a community trying to make art happen. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know,
I remember this is my like story that I always tell people to comment on Kingston's kindness. But my very first time coming to Kingston, I had like accepted a job here. I'd never been here. Mm-hmm. I came to town looking for apartments and stuff. And I was moving from London, which like, no offense to London, but seems like a very angry city all the time. So I drove in. I had rented a car. I parked downtown to go like look at some apartment. And I remember getting out of the car parked on Princess Street. And I get out and I start walking to the like meter thing to buy a ticket. And then some guy goes, "Hey!" And I'm like, "Oh, here we go." And he goes, "I still got half an hour left in my parking. Yeah. You want it?"
Nice.
Yeah, man, of course. Yeah. Thank you. Very kind.
Yeah. Yeah, no, honestly, Kingston, I can say the same. If I was out east, I would be talking about how much I love Kingston. You know, it's like it's like the, you talk about the other place that you are. But Kingston, like, I've had so many people who have been great at, like, even like, this Crash Test Dummy show, I asked, oh my gosh, Jason Dugan, like, who set us up with it? Like, I was like, oh, like, I'm just curious, like, who recommended? And he was like, oh, like, I've heard about you from Verge, and, like, you've been recommended that way. And I know also Verge set up the Georgia Harmer concert for us as well, which was very kind. And then Greg Tilson has been really great about, like, Skeleton Park and booking us shows there. So there are a lot of people who have really supported us here. So I also can say there that kindness exists in Kingston.
Well, and I think Kingston also, it's just everybody knows each other. There's no there's no point in being mean. there's no point, you know, and it's, you get so much out of the scene if you can love everybody in it and around you. And
definitely.
So let's talk about Another World, which you talk a lot about some like serious and heavy subjects on there, stuff like the housing crisis with a part of it. But you talk about it in such a way that I really appreciate. There's so many records and bands that I love that talk about like the state of the world right now. And it's just like, well, this sucks. And that's the end of the sentence. But you talk about it with such like hope, like the whole concept of Another World is that we can kind of build to like something greater than before. And I really appreciate that energy of the album. And was that a conscious effort, something you had to like keep in mind when you were creating?
No, I think that was something that I had to do for myself. I wrote that when I was isolated in my room in second year in university, and I wanted to have something to feel hopeful about, and I wanted something to look towards as a young person. And I also saw a lot of young people around me and a lot of my friends and people just feel sad and like, what the hell? Like, this is our world. This is what we have. Like, this is so like, it's the end of the world, like, nothing, like, I hate being a young person. And we also know, like, the amount of, like, just, like, mental health stuff that came out in COVID. And I also was in nursing school, and I was looking around at populations who are, yeah, just not feeling great and not doing great. And I wanted to have this sense of, like, no, actually something good can come. And I didn't want it to be a toxic positivity thing, but I do think that good things can come out of things being broken down and destruction. And I know that in the midst of things being broken down and being destructed, there's often not a lot of hope. But I also think that in the pandemic, I saw a lot of wonderful things. And I think the things that were mentioned were a lot of the bad things. And when I was involved in a lot of community projects during the pandemic, which made me realize how many people were so great at just like coming together and supporting one another, and how that is like the way that we will succeed. No matter the times that we're in and how shitty it can be, the core is like having a community of people and supporting one another, and that's how we can come out of things. And I think, yeah, the future, it's always, things are going to suck again and it's going to come back. But if you have a core community of people and you have a supportive group of people in your life, you'll survive and you'll be great.
Absolutely.
That's kind of, yeah. If I can create some more community through my project and make people feel less lonely, and people can feel connected to my music, that is the goal.
And I think,
sorry, go ahead.
I was just like, I mean, as someone playing this kind of music with you, I think what I really appreciate is that it matters to me when the music matters to the writer. And to, you know, and it, and I think a lot of people out in the world are feeling this feeling of like, wow, this is really messed up. We got to do something. And, you know, and to me, it's really important now of any time that musicians write about what they feel and experience and put it out there with no kind of concern about how that's going to be viewed by people that might not agree with you. I think you just have to put out something that makes you feel good about making music and continuing on in this world. And I think, you know, and I really appreciate playing the Netherworld stuff because it speaks to that frustration that a lot of people have. And I think that helps people come together when they feel heard in that feeling of like, I'm feeling scared, but I have some hope, but I don't, you know, I don't know what that hope is. I think, you know, I think it helps for a lot of people to hear like, oh, Clea has some hope.
Yeah.
Maybe I can too, you know.
Yeah, I think also like my music isn't necessarily, I know that I said that I needed that hope, but I also think that like I wanted like other people to have that hope. Like I feel like a lot of how I write music is like looking at other people and like seeing what's happening and just like my ideal is to like be on a wall and like nobody sees me and I just watch people and I watch dynamics and I see what's going on and I hear their problems and I hear their frustrations and then I'm like, oh, I'm feeling that too. I can relate to you. So honestly, I actually take no credit for this project. I take it like other people had these feelings. Other people inspired this. It's not me who had this idea. It's the world that had the idea and brought it to my attention.
You kind of mentioned going to school for nursing and now working in nursing. I feel like you do get a lot of that hearing other people's problems and hearing people's like vibe, you know, stuff going on. That's part of the job, right? Of like the things they're experiencing. Does that affect your how you approach music or how you lead a band, anything in that capacity?
Oh, that's a good question. When I wrote this album, I was in nursing school and I think that that's changed a lot. Being an actual nurse now versus being in nursing school. I think when I was in school, like I definitely was like learning a lot about dynamics and seeing a lot of things. And as a nursing student, you have more time to spend with people. And so I really enjoyed that. Now that I'm like an actual nurse, I feel maybe like I'm jaded a little bit more just because you don't have that time in the hospital-based system to like sit with people. And I feel deeply sad because I loved that in school is just being able to like talk to people and hear what they're feeling. But now I'm working in a system that is so drained and so broken that I don't have time to talk with people and I don't have time to advocate as much as I would want to. In terms of like leading a band, I think that it is good because I see like the ways that I would want to be treated and the ways that I would want to be listened to as a nurse in the hospital system. And I hope that I can do that as a band leader for people. Like if anyone is feeling they have like frustrations about being felt like they have something to say or have something to bring to the project, I love them to do that. Mainly it's that empathy aspect and just watching dynamics and seeing the world and seeing how people actually live. I feel like I never knew Kingston until I worked at KGH. Now I'm like, wow, this is Kingston. This is Kingston. Like just how hard people are living right now.
Plus, if someone parties too hard in the mosh pit, you know where to put the IV.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
This might be a good moment to drop a track. We're going to hear Floodplains.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about the song before we get into it?
Yeah, Floodplains. I wrote that like in second year or first year, actually, and then didn't record it for a while. But that has a project attached to it. When I was in Nova Scotia, I worked with this group called the Grassroots Grandmother Circle, and they're a group of Indigenous women who actually stopped Alton Gas from polluting the Shubenacadie River. And they were doing like, they're an Indigenous group who lead this like water walk called the Mi'kma'ki Water Walk, and it's like a walk of prayer around the Bay of Fundy. And so I got like listeners to donate to that organization upon the release because I felt like that the messaging and the lyrics of that really related to the bodies of water in Canada.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances go on sale June 24th. You can purchase both at kingstongrand.ca.
The amount of times I've actually had to be a nurse at my own show is crazy. Basically, after I played my song, and then I was standing in the audience, just watching the show, and I look like behind me and there's this guy lying on the floor and people are like looking around like, anyone a nurse? So I went over and I saw him on the ground and I was like, oh, hey, are you okay? Like, I'm a nurse. And I got him up and basically we called the ambulance. I was trying to like rule out stroke. I was doing like all my assessments. And then afterwards he was like kind of waking up and he's like, you just played, didn't you? And I was like, yeah. And then afterwards, I got so many emails on my Pyre Music account, and it was like, hey, is that guy in the ambulance okay? And I was like, yeah. So it was, yeah, the amount of times that you'll have, like, people collapse from, like, heat exhaustion or, like, who are too drunk. I think this guy was just fine. He was just had a little bit of heat stroke. Yeah. But, yeah, that was a fun experience. You always need a nurse and at a show, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Yeah. Playa, we've talked to you.
Yeah.
We want to hear from Michael a little more as well. Michael, first of all, are you a full-time musician?
I've been very lucky in the last couple of years to be able to eke out survival as a professional musician. I've been teaching. I have a couple upright bass students and just playing with as many people as I can play with, which has been great. And then I also babysit when that that's my kind of
your little cousin.
They're my first cousins once removed.
Okay.
3 and 6. I'm actually babysitting tomorrow.
Between the babysitting and then the child fans that you got, Clea, that there's like another market here somewhere. Like, I think you guys need to tour with Raffy or something.
I would love that.
Honestly, I'd be honored to have been babysat by Michael. I feel like you would have been like the most fun babysitter.
Michael would be a fun babysitter. Yeah.
I think I'm a pretty good babysitter. We can maybe next episode you'll have my my clients in. You can give the review. I'm thankful to have babysitting, and I'm also thankful to have music and. Thankful, you know, I feel very lucky to be able to be in the position I am. And honestly, part of that is because Kingston is a certain size of a community that means if you start playing bass at a young age, the word gets around. And so I think I'm very lucky to be in Kingston and to have grown up in Kingston because just that unique position of playing upright bass and being in a town of this size has allowed me to set myself up to make a living now playing music, which I feel really grateful for and for this community.
And you're in the Musicians Union as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on the executive board of the Union of Professional Musicians, Local 518.
Yeah. What does the union do exactly?
Yeah.
Like, so I think most of us have a vague idea.
Right. I mean, lots of folks know what a union is in a more broad sense, but basically it's workers getting together to organize themselves in a democratic way to try and put forward some protections for their labor. So that usually means in, say, a context of a factory, you might have a bunch of workers that vote to create a union, and then they negotiate with the boss, and then that place is unionized, and it has to follow that contract. So the Musicians Union is a bit different in how it functions because our workplaces are scattered everywhere, and we don't necessarily have one boss we respond to. So the Musicians Union, which is part of the AFM, the American Federation of Musicians, so the AFM covers Canada and the U.S., and then the CFM covers just Canada, and then the like UPM 518 goes from, I guess, Gann on one side to like Halliburton on the other side. So it used to be just Kingston, and we amalgamated with the Peterborough local So that's our region. And then how it works as a union is that it's more of like a freelancers union. So in the factory example, everyone has to have a vote, but it's different in the musicians union because you can just join the union and you get access to the benefits. And then it is on you when you file a contract to use those contracts because that's how we get the benefits. So the musicians union provides every musician with legal contracts that are supported by union lawyers that you can provide to a venue. And when you provide, you know, if they sign that contract, then that contract says that we promise to play, promise to show up on time, all that kind of thing. And the venue promises to pay us whatever, you know, whatever you decide in the contract. The other benefits of that is that I just got my first statement from my pension. We have a pretty great pension through the musicians union. And the advocacy we do is trying to get people to think about negotiation and using contracts for their own work. And we try and advocate for protecting musicians' labor in lots of different ways. And the
can't you also get a visa, like, for, like, you help with visa prices?
Yeah. So that's one of the big things that people will join the union for, is that we have greatly reduced prices for P2 visas going to the States, because unfortunately the American government makes Canadians pay a lot of money to travel. And so the musicians union is the only way you can get a discount on that. It's not free through the musicians union, but it's way less free if you don't go through the musicians union. So that's, you know, there's lots more I can talk about, but I feel like it.
Yeah, well, let's
I'm curious to hear what you want to know more.
Yeah, let's get a little more specific. I was just thinking, say somebody's listening to this, they're a musician, who should join the musicians union? At what point is somebody in a good position that would benefit them?
I think the musicians union is important for somebody who relies on income from music for any portion of their income, or if they are taking music really seriously. If you're a musician that makes money playing music and you would like to make more money playing music and you want to get a pension and you want to take it seriously as a job, then I'd say join the musicians union, because we're trying to protect the standard for professional musicians. So I'd say if you view yourself as a professional musician or want to become a professional musician, then we'd welcome you.
Well said.
Well, and I know you've been very outspoken about this kind of thing. And I remember you and I were both at the music law seminar for the last Spring Reverb Festival, which was really interesting. But I like that you've been outspoken about this. And I'm going to actually quote something I found that you said. I think it was on the Kingston Live site.
Right.
It was about working towards building a scene free from gatekeeping, unfair pay practices, sexual harassment, addiction, and discrimination.
The reason I think a lot about the politics of music and things like paying wages is because I think the issue a lot of musicians can run into is that when we aren't considering our workplaces as our workplaces, there are standards that can slip around how we're treated, how we treat other people, how we treat ourselves by, you know, things like drinking, that kind of thing. I think part to me of why it's important to think about professional standards for musicians is that setting that professional standard also means setting a professional standard for treatment of artists, for treatment of sound people, for treatment of the bar workers themselves. And I think the difficulty in music is when you're a musician and your wage is bargained down, or you don't know what you're getting paid in a night, you might not feel like you are working. You might not feel like what you're doing is important, but I think it really is, because it's the music itself that
heals.
You know, it's care work, right? And it's sad to me that it isn't necessarily put on the same level as a lot of other types of labor, because it makes it so that it is less protected, but also more dangerous, in all honesty. If people aren't talking about occupational standards in these fields, we can create a spot where nobody really knows what is acceptable, you know, what is good behavior, that kind of thing. And I think setting the standard for pay also sets the standard that all the other aspects of professional treatment also come along with that. And I think the other side of it too, I think, is that while musicians, like, there aren't a huge amount of statistics on mental health for musicians, but it's not great out there. Like, it's, you know, there was, I think it was a Swedish survey of a, like, a record label, and essentially they were finding that musicians faced up to, like, 2 times the rates of mental illness of the average population. And I think another study that was maybe a bit more recent got up to 3 times when they specifically targeted young independent musicians.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
I think
that's a lot.
It's a lot. I think there is 2 factors to that. One is that when you are a sensitive person, you gravitate towards things where you can experience that sensitivity and also express that sensitivity. And I think lots of very sensitive people get into music because they're emotional people and because it's emotional. And so we have that one factor of, like, drawing people into music that might have some struggles, and they put that struggle into, you know, that's, you know, we know this about artists, is that part of a lot of the reason why artists create is to voice that internal struggle. But I think, I mean, in all honesty, the other side of it is the unfortunate long-term effects of invalidation. Like, invalidation is dangerous to people if they experience it for a long time, and usually it results in anger, frustration, depression, addiction, and lashing out, right? Something that makes me sad about the scene, I think, is that we...
The Kingston scene specifically, or just in general?
The general scene. I think, you know, you can see it in Kingston in the same way that you see in any community, but lots of musicians face issues with addiction, that kind of thing. And I think that ultimately, to me, the biggest thing that hurts musicians is that when you don't get paid what your work should be valued at, you feel that. And that kind of experience of being invalidated in the music scene is pretty frequent. And I think it's a shame to me that we allow this validation to continue, because it also burns people out. Like, we're losing people in the scene. We have to kind of be honest with the fact that, like, not paying people well makes people want to quit.
I also think that there's something to be said too about, there's a lot of weird negotiations with bars where they're like, hey, we'll pay you in beer and we'll pay you in this. And it's almost like promoting that, like, oh, hey, we'll give you alcohol, but that's not really a great mental health thing. Actually, pay is great, because you can, oh, I'm paid in beer, so I'm going to keep drinking, rather than I'm being paid in money so I can buy therapy. Like, you know, like, I also think that there's also with how you're pressured as a musician to, like, market and promote yourself, and you're trying to always socialize, and there's, like, a pressure to party too as musicians, or a pressure to, like, be in the public eye. I think that also really affects mental health as well, like, trying to fit in.
That's something that's come up a lot, especially in, I think, the last year or two, is just people getting burned out by how much they need to promote and expose themselves. You know, there's all this energy being taken away from music, the thing that they love, and it's being diverted towards TikToks and stuff like that. And I feel like, I think this is the case almost everywhere, is a lot of people are not comfortable with that, but they feel like they're stuck in this system that forces them to constantly be exposing themselves.
And I mean, I think Kingston Live is amazing, because I think, you know, there's one of the things that I really think is important about talking about the labor of musicians is saying that, like, you should be a musician first. I want you to be as good as you can be at your craft, and I want you to provide a professional show. And I think part of the difficulty is that when we allow bars to set pay policies that don't involve telling a band what they're going to get paid up front, that could be a tip jar, that could be a percentage of bar, you can create a situation in which the bar doesn't take on risk for that evening financially. And so a band comes in and they're expected to take on the risk regarding their own pay instead of maybe the bar that, like, I think musicians should be seen as an investment. And I think promotion should be seen as protection of that investment. But I think if you are setting a deal where you are just saying you get to take the door, you don't have any investment, therefore you don't have to protect that investment with anything. And I think part of the reason that musicians are burning out on things like promotion and that kind of thing is because we're better at music than we're good at promotion. And I think other people like promotion better and are better at it than, mm-hmm. you know, even than me personally. Like I, you
we'll
know.
Leave promotion to Kingston Live.
Yeah. Well, and because you're great at it. And this is, Kingston Live to me is a great example of what happens when people invest in the thing that they're good at, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of allowing other people to, you know, instead of allowing other people to do the thing you're good at, you can jump in and do that, right? But I think the difficulty is just that when there isn't that upfront investment, then it shifts financial risk onto musicians, and it creates the impression amongst everybody that it is the musician's job not only to play a set, but to promote the set, to make sure that everybody comes. Like all of that kind of stuff adds up and makes it harder and harder to be a musician. Mm-hmm. I think that talking about financial risk in this is so important because it kind of highlights how, like, when a musician isn't told what they're going to get paid before they show up, they are accepting risk. But do they get the benefits of the investment in the first place? I think it's tough because a lot of people don't necessarily, well, a lot of people are afraid to talk about money and that kind of thing. But I think that we'll all do better if we can talk about money, because everybody's bottom line needs to be met. I think that part of meeting the musician's bottom line is letting us be able to afford rent, letting us afford to repair our instruments, and taking things off of our plate that allow us to be better at being musicians instead of giving us more things to do so that it's more efficient for you. Mm-hmm. I don't think that necessarily the answer is musicians just saying, no, we're not going to promote anything anymore. But I think the answer is also not making musicians in charge of promotion, you know, and so there's mm-hmm. lots of ways to change that. And I think Kingston Live is one of those ways, which I'm really appreciative of. And I also think that part of that is having conversations about money. So I thank you yeah. for having me on to, you know, it's something important to me. And I think that we shouldn't be scared to talk about it because it's something that faces all of us. And the more we can talk about it, the more we can find a just solution that allows everybody to be happy.
I did want to ask you about the Jazz Society too.
Yes.
What's going on? Tell us all about it.
So I joined the Jazz Society a little while ago, just trying to get involved. I went to school at Humber for a couple of years, and then I came back just kind of trying to reconnect with my community. It was right during COVID. So joining the Jazz Society was part of me trying to get involved in organizing. And then recently, Dave Kuhn, the former president, stepped down, and I kind of got tapped on the shoulder because I play jazz, I play upright bass, and I'm really interested in organizing. And I decided, like, yeah, this is a cool opportunity to take a leadership position in the music scene. So the Jazz Society has basically, in the last few years, we've been very successful at getting grant money and bringing in some amazing artists from around Canada, and also keeping in touch with jazz musicians that are from here that might be elsewhere in the world. Lots of folks that grew up in Kingston and are musicians elsewhere, you know, they love coming back to do a hometown show. But I think the difficulty the Jazz Society was running into is just that it's been tough lately to get your money back on a show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough to get people in the seats, and they have a really amazing community around the mailing list and the shows that they do have. What I want to bring to the Jazz Society is to keep doing what we're doing well, but also I want to bring in more connection to teaching, especially because my biggest thought with the Jazz Society is that we have our adult fan group. You know, we have that cohort, but we need to also make sure we have young musicians that want to go to shows because they want to see amazing jazz musicians. And so my goal for the Jazz Society, I want to do more group classes in town and beginner improv workshops and that kind of thing, and focus on building up the workshops as a way of engaging local musicians and also bringing in younger people and kind of getting, you know, it's kind of mentioning that gig pipeline, right? Kind of trying to create the same thing in jazz, a place where, you know, you can go to the Jazz Society website, you can find a workshop on beginner improv for people who've never done that before, and you can also go to a jazz jam with people who are professional jazz musicians. You can try that kind of thing. And then maybe if there's a workshop with a visiting musician, I hope to bring that whole kind of thing into the jazz society, because, I mean, not that it wasn't part of it. The jazz society started as musicians getting together to jam. So I think my hope with the jazz society is to keep doing what we're doing and bring in these amazing musicians, but also bring that focus on developing the base for jazz in Kingston and make sure that we have the next generation getting into jazz and getting into the jazz society. So that's, yeah. But I'm excited. I've never been a president before.
Congratulations.
It's getting to my head, I think. I make Clea call me president at rehearsal. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask the two of you about, we've talked a little bit about the housing crisis. We've talked about getting musicians paid fair wages and all of that. Something we've seen on the podcast is there's this connection between musicianship, artistry, and activism. I have a feeling I know where that comes from, but I'm curious if either of you care to comment on that, because we've seen that, like, Sarah Harmer, she's been a great activist for environmental issues. We talked to her a while back, and even your performance the other day in Market Square. I remember a friend of mine was saying, what does it say on Sam's keyboard there? Which is, hey, the world is on fire. But there's something interesting about musicians and artists, that they care about things and they want to see the world be a better place.
I would say there's a lot of that in the Kingston community. Like, I would say, like Gord Downey, like Sarah Harmer. But I know a lot of musicians who don't care. Like, to be honest, I would say I know a lot that are very apolitical. And sometimes there's a little bit of a fear to actually have a stance on things, because it's safer to not say anything, because then you can be more applicable to a giant group of people.
We remember what happened to the Dixie Chicks.
You know, like, it would be way easier to not have a stance on things and just, like, leave your songs up for interpretation and not say much, because more people would probably be more invested and not shut you down automatically. So I don't know if I agree with a lot of artists having that.
Okay.
Not to make this a debate, but I do think that Kingston has a great, I don't know, what are your thoughts, Michael?
I have a few kind of ideas around. I think in general, a lot of the folks that are working in the arts that are young folks are generally more interested in activism. I think there is a bit of a kind of activist base in town. People are trying to get engaged and, you know, especially after the pandemic, people are trying to grow that. And I think, I think a lot of it is that a lot of artists reflect the world in their stuff and have a lot of feelings about stuff, which is why they might choose to write something in the first place.
Yeah, I feel it goes back to that sensitivity point we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of audiences go to musicians to hear what they feel like they can't say. The connection that an audience has with a musician is that that musician maybe wrote something about themselves, but when the audience hears it, they relate. They might not have been through the same thing, but they can relate. And
they're
so
hearing something they couldn't express themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think a lot of folks that might feel like they don't have the voice themselves like it when musicians use their voice, because they go, somebody's saying it. Someone's doing it.
Going back to, like, even, like, what we're talking about with, like, equal pay and, like, Tent City and stuff, I think that also, like, artists are so close to the borderline of, like, social rights and social, like, stuff. Like, the amount of artists who are on the vert, like, homelessness or stuff like that, because it's so hard to pay and it's not funded and they're, isn't that, like, it's so easy to relate to that. I think that there's, like, a lot of demographics in arts that also allows you to be very diverse and gives voice to a diverse group of people who are in an arts community. So I think that it also gives voices to people who, like, might be oppressed.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find it funny because I think artists are often expected to have political, you know, there's this kind of idea that we support artists because they're that political voice that brings forth new ideas into the political sphere, that kind of thing. I think the thing that I hope to see in the next while is that musicians realize that their own issues are also stuff that they can reflect. You know, I think to me it's important that musicians are thinking about politics because I think that makes better music. I think that's just, it's pretty universal that people deal with. I think a lot of musicians may also feel that they wish they could talk about their own thing, and they have frustration in themselves about maybe not getting paid as they might like. But the thing they can express frustration might be about climate change. So, you know, I think there are lots of ways where I hope that musicians can see the rights of musicians as an issue too. But I think lots of musicians just care about being heard in general and
the sensitivity, which you mentioned too. Like, I think there's a lot of things where I don't realize that it's actually me who's feeling it. Like, sometimes I'll write a song and then I'm like, it was supposed to be about something else or someone else. And I'm like, whoa, actually I was going through, I was processing something too. Like, there's almost like this, like, you're one with others. Like, I think there's this extreme empathy and sensitivity that artists can have. You actually really, really empathize with situations and things going on that makes it tie in.
Sort of like the shared struggle.
Yeah.
It's just empathy leaking out.
Well,
Clay, I find it interesting that your first thought was there are a lot of musicians who don't care.
What
I was going to say, I think it might be, I like to make the distinction sometimes between artists and entertainers.
Okay.
And I feel like the artist feels more because they're trying to make a greater connection, whereas the entertainer is trying to create maybe a greater sense of disconnection. Like, let's forget about what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, I think definitely genre and audience appeal is a big factor in this, because I'm thinking more like pop, mainstream music. I actually think there's like a lot that is apolitical and it appeals and it's entertaining and people want to listen to it because they forget about their problems. They forget
and that has
about
a place
everything.
Too.
Yeah. That has a place too, 100%. I'm not bashing it. But I think that was my first thought when I thought, like, as a general comment, I'm taking that into account. But then if you think about like a genre from like an artist independent like kind of factor, then I think that there's a lot of like politics brought into art. So I guess for clarification.
And I think maybe also
no clarification necessary. just a thought.
I think also, like, when you're in a position of, say, booking a tour where you might run into a whole bunch of different musicians, you know, there's a kind of, like, the musical community I see being a freelancer is a lot more locally based, whereas you might have more experiences with people coming out and touring or that kind of thing. And especially if, you know, especially if there's more money on the line, I think it provides more incentive to say or not say certain things.
Yeah.
So maybe you're more exposed to people that are more afraid to.
Yeah, I also think that, like, there are times where maybe also it comes into, like, being a woman and knowing sometimes there's things that, like, you don't want to say because that might hurt you or you might make waves. Like, there's been times where, like, I've thought about not challenging somebody for being creepy because I fear that that's going to affect them booking me again. I think there's a little bit of like fear-based stuff too, where you don't maybe want to say things because there is a power in the music industry. And I know friends who also are like, oh yeah, like, I'm not going to say that because then I won't get booked to play that show. And then that's going to hurt me at the end of, like, so I guess my first reaction to that was like, also thinking about all the times where you feel like you need to be safe in what you say.
I've really noticed that. I had this interesting experience playing with Savannah at Musiki, where this, I remember Savannah was like tuning and just talking, and then this guy from the audience goes, less talking, more playing. I was furious immediately, and so I just grabbed the tip jar and just start shaking it in front of his face and going, like, what do you think you need to do to make that happen? What are you, you know? And then I realized that Savannah didn't react at all. And I kind of had that realization of like, oh, it's actually probably safer for her to not engage with that type of person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an unfortunate lesson that like I learned, which is that that person probably would have not said as much stuff if I didn't react.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of a sad thing to see in the scene, but it's, I think there is, yeah, like you're saying, to the level of safety, maybe not even talking about money or that kind of thing, just a kind of element of like, you have to pack up and leave at the end of the night. Yeah. You don't get to just...
Yeah, and if you want to play again, you know, you got to think about, oh, what bridges am I burning or whatever, or like stuff like that, which I don't feel concerned about when I'm in my band, because I feel very supported. And like, that's almost why I like playing with a band actually a lot more, is because I feel supported and I have a group of people who are there who are like, hey, I'll advocate for you when you can't do it yourself. And that is like a really lovely thing. So,
yeah.
Anything else before we close it up?
It's all I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. And thanks so much for doing the work that you're doing. It really means a lot to the community. You're really elevating all of us, which is great.
This has been Kingston Live. We encourage you to rate us on your listening platform of choice and subscribe where possible. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by Riley Jabor and John Sanfilippo. Executive producer, Rob Howard. Kingston Live is a member of the Canadian Live Music Association. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Sweet, that was fun.
Yes. That was a ton of fun.
I feel like I was more nervous than I needed to be. I
don't know. Michael was in the mid, he's like, I'm nervous.
Were you nervous?
I was thinking about Michael being nervous, so I didn't have time to think about being nervous. Okay.
No static. No static. No static. No static. Mondays. 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 6 to 8. 6 to 8. 6 to 8. 6 to 8 p.m. 6 to 8 p.m. Mondays, 6 to 8 p.m. CFRC 101.9. CFRC.ca. No static, Mondays, 6 to 8 p.m., CFRC 101.9, CFRC.ca, CFRC's most varied variety show, CFRC's most varied variety show, CFRC's most varied, CFRC 101.9, CFRC.ca, no static, Mondays, 6 to 8 p.m.